And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, what's up, man?
Man, everything's good. What's going on? What's happening? What's happening? Football world Thursday night. Get after it.
Thursday night. Come join us tonight. Come hang out with us. Bucky, myself, Joy Taylor, little Amazon Thursday night football. You can go to the Twitch feed. We got it up and running, so it's all fixed. If you were there last week, we had a little hiccup, but it's all good now. Go to twitch.tv/movethesticks and watch the game with us. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun, man. And this is a game that has a lot of intrigue because the world is fascinated by Mac Jones and what the Patriots are doing. And is the evil empire back? So it should be a lot of fun to sit there and watch it up close and personal, watch a game and kind of have those conversations about if the Patriots are back, why are they back? And what have they done in a year to look so drastically different than the team that we saw last year?
Yeah, and that's what we're going to hit on today. We're going to hit on this Patriots thing. I've got another topic I want to hit after we get through this Patriots discussion about how we identify a certain position and maybe something that's a little antiquated that we're going to try and solve here. But I want to get to the Patriots stuff. There's a great article I read this morning. I would encourage everybody to go check it out. Everybody's is kind of chiming in with them playing on Thursday night. But Kevin Clark, who's outstanding over at The Ringer, he wrote about how the Patriots – kind of paved the way for Mac Jones and have set him up for success, and kind of delves into a little bit of that nature nurture argument of you know, how do you make this thing work? And it actually, before we get into the Mac Jones specifically, Buck, he made a point in there, which I thought was fascinating, that we kind of chase this in scouting. We kind of chase this franchise quarterback and this franchise altering quarterback concept. And when in fact, it's not, there's no reality to it. Like we talk about, oh, certain guys can pull, you know, trucks and trailers and our whole thing. Yep. But at some level, everybody is dependent upon the environment in which they arrive.
Always. And I think the frustrating part of the discussion when it comes to quarterback around draft time, DJ, is it's always the same thing. Oh, we're looking for the guy. We expect the guy to be able to single-handedly do it. But it's a team game. And it requires a team to be able to do it. Now, we know that the better the quarterback, the better the odds of you getting to the winner's circle. But you have to have everything in place to make sure that the quarterback can flourish. And so I think your analogy or what you've done with the three P's makes a lot of sense when it comes to it. Because when you think about your quarterback, it takes protection. It takes playmakers around him. And then it really takes the right play caller. And I think each of those things is very important to the success of the quarterback, because when we think about protection, the one thing that I don't care in this league, it's always been like this. When the quarterback gets hit, he changes how he performs. If the quarterback is hit, it changes how he performs. It changes the clock in his head. It changes everything. If the quarterback doesn't have sufficient playmakers around him, he can't do anything, because unfortunately he cannot throw the ball to himself. He has to be able to have people that are reliable and dependable, pass catchers, guys that can get open. And if you have a basketball team around where you have a diverse set of skills on the perimeter, man, it allows the quarterback to utilize everything that he's blessed with. And then finally, and maybe the most important part, is the play caller. Yeah. The play caller being able to understand exactly who he's running the game through. I've heard you use this analogy when we talk about, hey man, joystick, we're playing the video game. I'm playing the game through the eyes of the quarterback. So what does my quarterback do really well? What doesn't he do well? My job as the play caller is to figure out how many times can I call the same concepts that he really knows and understands a million different ways with some different icing and window dressing to get him into a comfort spot. And when you have a play caller who makes it about the quarterback and not about himself in the plays that I like rather than what the play caller likes, you have a chance to have a lot of success. But yes, as Kevin Clark illustrated, it is the infrastructure that really helps the quarterback flourish, more so just in the single talent of the quarterback.
Yeah, he has a little a quote in here, which he pulled from Pro Football Focus's Deontay Lee, and I want to make sure I give him the proper credit. So I'm going to read you this little part here, Buck. The recipe for success, acting like the schematic advances of the past decade never even happened. In a league that's been 62% pass over the past month, the Patriots are legitimately a run-first offense at 50.4%, and that's removing all garbage time snaps. Just four of the 657 RPOs and three of the 243 bootlegs in the NFL since week seven came from New England. And only the San Francisco 49ers and Baltimore Ravens used 21 personnel, two backs and a tight end, more often. So that's what you talk about from a scheme standpoint. How do you alleviate pressure on a quarterback? You talked about not wanting him to get hit. You know how you don't get him hit? You run the football. And then it's okay. Well, then, well, you know, it's a passing league and all that. The analytics are saying that. Here's the other thing. When you are passing the football, guess when you're passing it? You're passing it in advantageous situations.
Yeah.
It's third and three. It's third and four. It's third and two. You're not putting yourself in a situation where incompletion, sack, you know, that's like you watch the Jets. You see a lot of that. Incompletion, sack, third and 16. Go get them. Mm-hmm. Go get them, Zach. Mm-hmm. See how that works out. So there's that side of it. Then when I dug into, which is what we're going to talk a lot about on the game tonight, in terms of the next gen stats numbers and what Mac Jones is doing, I think this is fascinating, man. Where is danger in football? It's in the middle of the field, right?
The middle of the field. Yes,
that's where you have all the noise.
Too many bodies. Too many
a lot
bodies.
Of bodies. You've got droppers. You've got rotating safeties. You've got a lot to cut through there. So when you look at how they're using Mac has 43 completions on out routes away from the noise. That's the most in the league. He's completing 82.7%, which is the highest completion percentage there. So he has absolutely been accurate. 401 yards, second most in the league. So he's been outstanding there, working outside. How about to the backs on screens? He's completed 17 balls to running backs on screens, most in the league. 161 yards on screens to backs, second most in the league. Then let's go to checkdowns, right? So on non-blitzes, when they're not bringing extra rushers, they're letting the defense expand, and he has targeted the backfield on 28% of non-blitz throws, which is the second most in the league. So in other words, we have plays designed to keep you out of danger, and Mac Jones deserves 100% of the credit for executing those at a very high level. He is extremely accurate, Buck, and it's been impressive. Outside, underneath, been great. And I think as the season's going along, I don't want to shortchange him. They're starting to let him get a little bit more. He makes a throw, I think it's to Bourne, down there in the red zone. And that's, you know, with the safety coming over in the corner and trail, that's a big time throw. They're not majoring in that. They're sprinkling that in. They're not majoring in it.
Okay, so here's what I love about the conversation that we're having. And I think it's really important that people are paying attention, because I don't think it's been discussed enough about Mac Jones. What everyone is talking about is like, oh, everyone missed on Mac Jones. How could you say this and say that? And I would say, yes, maybe we downgraded him because we didn't necessarily see the sizzle that we're seeing from some of the other quarterbacks in the league. Because remember, every scout is impacted by what they see in the league. It's one of the things that we talk about. Study the league so you know what plays. Well, what had been playing well last year in the league? Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, even a little Russell Wilson, like Josh Allen. Everybody that was performing well, with the exception of Tom Brady, and he was a little up and down at times, was an athletic, mobile, new school type quarterback. So what that naturally leads you to believe is you begin to look at, oh, is the league trending that way? Let me put my eyes towards the athletic guys and make sure that I have that peg, because it appears four out of the top five are guys that are moving around and doing all kinds of stuff. And we really didn't see a traditional drop back pass at the top of the charts. So he was influenced by that, because it's always a trickle down. Much like the Jordan Love thing was influenced by Pat Mahomes going from being a guy that was a sandlot player at Texas Tech to being an MVP. Same thing happens in reverse, and it impacted Mac Jones. What you're pointing out, though, is what I think is really critical. So when you pointed out the stats, you talked about throwing the balls outside. You talked about throwing the running backs, and you talked about the check down. Couple things that work in terms of helping Mac Jones get to those plays and have high efficiency doing it. One, when you run the ball and you operate out of 21 personnel, defense's natural reaction is, if this is chess, they do that, I come back. Okay, we got to drop a defender in the box. So that means typically more single high safety looks or more off coverage on the outside. So by formation and by maybe the way personnel, you've now dictated, hey, I can get my guy layups. If we line up in this, if we line up in ace personnel, two tight ends, two receivers on the field, guess what? He gets off coverage. Layup, let's throw it outside. Screen game. Okay, so everyone thinks screen game third and long because passing situation, you want to get the pass rushes up the field and those things. But no. Also on rundown, screens are effective because everyone's in the box. They overreaction to the play action. You then scoot the running back out, drop it to him. Everyone's coming up. It's an easy completion. And because we're so conditioned to think that screen passes have to be big plays, DJ, if you get 4 or 5 yards on a screen play, that's a positive gain. It's just like a run. So those things are good. The thing that Mac Jones deserves credit for, and it's the hardest thing for young quarterbacks to do, understanding and embracing the check down. All right. So to bring it to you in a high school thing, having coached a lot of high school ball, particularly 7-on-7 events or whatever, the one thing that I do when I'm coaching defense is, oh, with these 5-star players, they want to show off their arm. So what we're going to do is we're going to park the safeties in the parking lot. We're going to take all of that away. And we're going to see if they're patient and disciplined enough to dump it to the back over and over and over again. And as I've talked to quarterbacks, you know, hey, man, if you looked at the great ones, Tom Brady and Drew Brees, you know what they do? They take more checkdowns than anybody else. And then after taking a bunch of checkdowns, because I will say this as a defender, every completion has an impact on the defense. As much as I say, like, hey, man, let them take the checkdown. DJ, when they take 8 or 9 checkdowns in a row, hey, man, we got to get a checkdown. Then when that dude moves, then your shot goes over the top. And what Mac Jones has done, his maturity is what it really speaks to, is he understands that. Hey, I'm going to just keep taking this dump off, and when I get a shot, I'm going to cash in the lottery ticket. That's what Tom Brady did, and that is what made Tom Brady the greatest, is because he understood that early, and he played that chess game better than anybody else.
All right, so here's I want to bring this up, and I'm gonna have our good buddy Jim Nagy on. He's gonna come on again here, I think, next week. So we'll ask Jim about this next week. So, and there's nobody I respect more. I love Jim. We've known each other forever, but I will take exception with one thing that he said, and that is, he said, "I don't know how." Basically, summarizing here, I don't know how the league could have missed on Mac Jones. In other words, making him the 5th quarterback select. I mean, he's still a top 15 pick. It's not like he was slighted in the 6th round. But he said, because there was such an easy comparison from the year before with Joe Burrow, and that he was making the point of they're kind of the same guy. Here's a couple things I'll point out. Mac Jones in his college career had 54 carries for 42 yards and 2 touchdowns. Joe Burrow, from an athletic standpoint, 258 carries, 820 yards, 13 touchdowns. He is on a different planet as an athlete and as a play creator off schedule. I thought he did things, you know, obviously the on schedule stuff, decision making, accuracy. Yeah, even arm strength wise, I think Joe Burrow has a little bit stronger arm, but I think that's a discussion. I get that. As athletes, I don't think that's close in terms of what we saw in college.
I don't think he's on par with Joe Burrow as an athlete. And let's take football out of the mix, because, you know, as scouts, what we do is we go into the background. Joe Burrow was a very accomplished basketball player in high school, like a legitimate basketball player, hoop dreams, could play. Mac Jones was a good athlete, but he was a tennis star.
Yeah.
And so being a tennis star early, he has footwork and he has good short area equipment because that's developed on the hard courts and those things. Other guys who were tennis players, I would say Drew Brees, very accomplished tennis player at the junior circuit level, could play. And so I think maybe if anything, for me in particular, maybe I underestimated that part of it. Like, hey, give him credit for what he was able to do inside the pocket in terms of, like, the subtle movement. But no, I think that comparison between Joe Burrow and Mac Jones is off, because Joe Burrow was, in my mind, a much better athlete. But I'll also say this about Joe Burrow, and using that comp, Joe Burrow last year struggled because the P's weren't in place for him. They didn't have great and sufficient protection. They didn't have all of the playmakers around him, and the play caller was still adapting to who Joe Burrow was. Mac Jones steps into a different situation because the protection was there because they upgraded over the offseason. I still worry about the playmakers around, but the system has been good. And so the protection and the play caller has helped them compensate for maybe some of the lack of playmakers around them, and that has helped Mac Jones have a lot of success right away.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I would say is, you could say, okay, well, there was the comparison that was just sitting there for everybody with Joe Burrow. which we have a little different belief there. The other thing I would say is the comparison was coming out of the same school with Tua, who jumped into the league and didn't necessarily take the league by storm. And somebody who we saw operate that same offense with all those same players, Alabama, at a ridiculously high clip. Now, Mac Jones, I think numbers might even been a little bit better, but Tua was phenomenal in that same setup. And I'm not, I don't remember us saying, you know, I think something was said about the fact that, oh, you guys, you know, people in general, not us, but people in general dismissed him because of the talent around him, but nobody dismissed Joe Burrow because of the talent around him. And I'm like, I distinctly remember us having the conversation about if you go look at pretty much the majority of the quarterbacks, you know, in terms
everybody
of Deshaun Watson, they all had dudes. We went through and we had that whole discussion. Now, the ones who didn't were
Josh Allen,
Herbert and Josh Allen were two that had to kind of navigate around that. Jordan Love was another one who everybody kind of left. His last year, but the majority of these guys Lamar did have
great, but most of them, you have big programs. You're a big program. You're playing in the college.
Baker Mayfield was the same thing.
Yeah. You have guys around you. Here's the thing. I'm glad you brought up Tua because I think Tua deserves to be in the conversation because here's what I want. Do you believe that Tua Tagovailoa, if put in a situation in New England where he was set up, would he have had more success than the success that he's had in Miami? I think Mac Jones, maybe Mac Jones is a better player, but I think the setup is really what we're pointing out. The Patriots have set up their young quarterback for success. And DJ, one of the things about stability, when you've been around in the place for a long time, Bill Belichick being at the Patriots for 20 plus years, having done this exercise before with Tom Brady, I think they had a very clear plan for how to develop the quarterback. And when I keep making these references to, man, I look at this team looks like the early 2000s team. Well, you heard Kevin Clark in the piece allude to, hey, when everyone else is changing and chasing trends, Patriots run the same old
playbook. We do what we do.
We run the same old playbook. DJ, there's comfort in that because they know all the ins and outs about the system. And I think the one thing as a player, you want to be able to go to the play caller and a coach. Hey, coach, they're hitting us with this. What's the answer? Oh, don't worry about that. We got it. We seen this before. You remember back in? And they can get fixes. So Mac Jones is doing a great job, but he also has the benefit of coaches who have been there a long time, who know all the ins and outs of the system, and that allows them to confidently teach it without worrying about some mystery surprise that's going to come up and fool them. I think they've seen pretty much everything that you can see when you haven't changed the system over 20 years.
Yeah. The other component to this thing, I'm looking at the points per game, right? So let's flip it over to the defensive side of the ball. The Patriots defense is allowing 17.7 points a game, which is the second best points allowed number in the league. The Buffalo Bills are at 15. So they're at 17. Let's just compare them with the New York Jets inside that division. The Jets are allowing 32.9 points a game. There's a little difference when you're playing with that cushion, knowing a punt is our friend versus if we punt, that's seven more points getting ready to go back up on the board. You look at some of these other teams with young quarterbacks. Jacksonville's giving up 25.8. Not great. Who else are we looking at here? Who else is in this rookie class?
You got Chicago.
Chicago, where is Chicago? Chicago is giving up 24.9 points a game. Who else are we missing here?
I mean, DJ, that's really
San Francisco. I mean, he's not playing, so it doesn't matter what they're doing. It's interesting. It's interesting. You know, even Miami is we'll see if they can get it going. They got it going last week, but they've been giving up 25.2 points a game. 17 points a game for this Patriots defense. So, I don't want it to come across like we are not giving Mac his flowers and his love. He is executing beautifully. Two things can be true. He can be playing pretty well, playing good football, but also be in by far not even debatable the best situation that you could be in.
The best situation that you absolutely can be in. So, here's the thing. So I'm looking at the game logs right now, and this is also important. And what I want people to understand, because we're not taking it down, what we're trying to do is trying to put context and perspective behind. So I'm looking, DJ, I'm looking at his totals, 198 yards, 139, 217. He has one 300 yard game, 220, 230, 275, 270, 180, 281. So by all accounts, what he's doing is really being efficient, but it's not like they're asking him to light it up, right? To light it up over and over and over again to make sure that he understands exactly how he has to play. I'm totaling up his pass attempts and how many passes he's throwing per game. DJ, he's averaging 32 attempts per game, all right? But part of that is influenced by the fact that in the Patriots' first four games when they were 1-3, he had 39 attempts, 30 attempts, 51 attempts, and 40 attempts. Yeah. Since then, it has come down to 23, 18. He has two games where he's at 35 or so, 20 and 30. And so what they've done is as they've gotten better, they've also taken some of that off of his plate because they've been able to dictate the terms. And so we talk about pitch counts and being able to do it. I bet you if you asked the Patriots, they would probably like it at 25 or so because mm-hmm. it allows them to control when they throw. They can dictate when they throw. And you talked about manageable situations. It's a lot easier to throw second and short, third and manageable, as opposed to these obvious third and 10 plus long yardage situations where they can load up and give you all the exotics that typically lead to turnovers.
Yeah. The other thing that I'll add, I think they did a nice job in free agency. You go out and get a couple tight ends. Hunter Henry is out playing mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. Jonnu Smith, he's got 7 touchdowns, but again, find you some good completions, some easy completions. Trent Brown's back in there. He's back in the lineup now, healthy. They traded for him. Jalen Mills has been solid. Kyle Van Noy's played really well. They just did a nice job. Matt Judon's been a stud. He's got like 9 sacks. He's played.
Did you expect that? Did you expect that?
He's a good player. He's a really good player. And I think you started to see him come on towards the end of his time there with the Ravens. I can pull it up real quick, mm-hmm. but I feel like you started to see, this guy had tons of production in college, and you started to see that guy, kind of emerge here during his time in Baltimore. And he's kind of just like that. He's a power guy. Kind mm-hmm. of fits that mold. In the Ravens in 2019, he had 9.5 sacks. Then he had 6 in 2020, only played 14 games. So he's already got 9.5 this year. I thought it was fascinating, though, because they've gone to the Ravens well before. They tried it with Adelius Thomas. It did not work out well. But this is more of a Patriots-type player.
Yeah, and it's funny, right? So in talking to people in the building, the Ravens at times had some immaturity issues with some of the players and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then so I wondered, everyone knows how buttoned up the Patriots program is, from top to bottom. But I think it's another example of how players ultimately crave structure and discipline and clarity. Mm-hmm. And I think there's definitely some clarity in terms of how you're going to play in New England. There's also like that fundamental focus. And I do believe that guys can get better if they buy in. And I think you've seen that with Judon. And I think they had a very clear idea of how they wanted to play him. And he's flourished in it. And it's just amazing to me that a team, we were having this debate, and a lot of it is like what I call high take media debate, like, oh, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, this and that. I don't think you can underscore Bill Belichick's greatness as a coach because of the consistency. I mean, the consistency to always being there. We can talk about Tom Brady being there, whatever, but you won't find a great coach who hasn't had great players. And so that's what it requires. But I will give him credit because this job that they're doing, and we'll see if they can maintain it. It's a really impressive job that this team has done in terms of the rebuild because they look like the Patriots. And I think that's the scary part for everybody. Everyone is like, man, I thought it'd be down for the next 5 or 6 years. It'd give some other people a chance to go to the top of the thing. And lo and behold, you look up and the Patriots are right there. Yeah. just hovering right there. It's bananas.
No. And a couple of the interesting things from doing the next gen study on this as well. I mean, look at the Patriots defense. We mentioned Judon. He's 10th in the NFL in pressure rate. So he's outstanding. Christian Barmore leads all rookie interior defensive linemen with 22 pressures. That's 10th, tied for 10th among all interior defensive linemen. Like, he has been a great, great pick for them out of Alabama. Somebody who came on late in Alabama. I think obviously the relationship there between Belichick mm-hmm. and Saban probably helped get that endorsement for him, but he's been outstanding. one of the best rookies in the league. And the other thing that stood out to me, and I saw this preparing for the Chargers game against the Patriots a couple weeks ago, they send three or fewer rushers on 22% of dropbacks. That's the most of any team in the league. There's only two teams over 20% in the entire league. And there's nothing – first of all, I was talking to Chris Long about this. And then nothing more frustrating for a defensive lineman when you only get to rush three. But there's nothing also more frustrating for a quarterback when you've got to comb through eight bodies back there in coverage. And with that three, it's not like they just line up in a three-man front and rush. They give you different looks, and they're able to get one of those three in a pretty favorable matchup. So you still get a little bit of pressure. Now you got all that you got to sort through.
You got to sort through it. And the beautiful thing about what they do from a coverage standpoint, it's not your high school three-man rush, eight guys in coverage, no, where everyone is just spot dropping and looking at the quarterback, and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna take the check down. They're doing where they're playing man to man or man match, and they're, you know, you're locked up, and then you can't figure out who the switches are and who's there, and they got people underneath to rally to the check down very, very quickly. They make it complex, but this is a team that has always opted for coverage over pressure. Mm-hmm. And it's just an amazing thing for me because DJ, when is the last time they've had like what we call an elite great pass rusher? They had Chandler Jones and they were okay letting him walk.
Yeah, we're good.
Letting him go. Hey, that's going to be a little pricey for us. They tend to put their money in the back end as opposed to the front end. I think the fascinating discussion would be at a time where we talk about team building, the first things are like pass rush and corners.
Yeah.
To ask Belichick, hey, why don't you go after high end rushers? You know?
Yeah. But they also run games as much or more than anybody in the league, and they're outstanding at it. And they use their linebackers to get involved with that. They'll use Van Noy from off the ball and let him just pick the crud out of interior linemen and run loops off him. Here's an interesting other interesting number I'll give you here. My last next gen nugget for this game. So you talked about the fact that they, you know, it's not just a garden variety, you know, rush three drop eight situation, or even it's not just pure man. You talk about man match. How about this as a quarterback, when you're trying to get indicators? When I was growing up, I had a quarterback coach that used to use the phrase that safeties are the window into the soul of the defense. So the safeties in their location will tell you what you're going to see. So Adrian Phillips, safety, right? 15% of his snaps is a line of scrimmage defender. 31% of his snaps as a linebacker, 18% of his snaps as a slot corner, 11% of his snaps as a wide corner, 25% of his snaps as a deep safety. Okay, let me give you another one. Kyle Duggar, safety, 7% of his snaps as a line of scrimmage defender, 42% as a linebacker, 25% in the slot, 10% out wide, and 17% as a deep safety. Have fun figuring out what the heck those guys are doing.
Okay, so then let me pull it behind the curtain as to why they're able to do this. The Patriots are one of the few teams that cross-train all of their DBs. So the definition of cross-training means I take corners and I have them practice at safety. I have corners practice at nickel and dime. I have safeties practice at nickel linebacker and all of those things. And what it does, one, it increases the aptitude of all your players because they know how they fit in the puzzle, because they now see how the other parts of the puzzle work. Two, it gives you the ultimate flexibility to be able to change your packages each and every week. We're going to run the same defense, but guess what? We got different bodies here. Hey, Kyle Duggar, this week you're the Jack linebacker. Adrian Phillips, you're the deep safety. What? Okay, this week, Phillips, you're the lurk. You're coming off the edge. Duggar, you're in the post.
Yeah.
And what you're doing for players who are used to doing it, they're just like, oh, this is what we do in practice all the time. But as you talk about for the quarterback, as we are so prone to identify numbers, wait a minute. 24 is normally, he's at a line.
Why do you think Tom Brady was so vocal and upset about the number changes? Yes. Because those safeties and linebackers are indicators. And now you've got the numbers mess. Even if you memorize the numbers during the week, it still messes with you.
It messes with you because, as you know, we set the protection off the mic. So when you're watching the game and you hear the TV copy, you hear the quarterback or the center will identify, hey, 44 is the mic. Okay, so then that says, hey, we're sliding away from him, we're sliding to him, we count him as a double read guy, running back, all that. Well, now you have this amoeba of bodies and this ever-changing stuff. You don't know who to set it on, which is also why more of these defensive coaches are going to sub packages because you got a bunch of little dudes on the field running around making a ton of plays.
Which leads me to this question. I know teams have done this in the past, but I wonder if we asked around to teams that are playing against the Patriots during the week of practice, if you just don't put any numbers on any jerseys. You know what I mean? Because you can get
yellow pennies.
Just yellow pennies. Give me 11 yellow pennies over there, and let's just play the position. This guy's lined up as a linebacker, so I'm going to treat him as a line. It might be a corner or a safety, but where he is right now, he's playing linebacker. So try and just close your eyes and eliminate the numbers from your thought process.
It's really a clever strategy, and is one of those things. Particularly, they have taken it to the next level. Now, I would say they don't do the high wire act that Mike Pettine and Rex and those guys do, where they get super creative and they have all the exotic blitzes. But the moving around of the people in the back end, and that's a great stat. The next gen stuff with Duggar and Adrian Phillips, like how they just have been deployed a bunch of different spots. DJ, that's what you want. Like in college, because to me, and I think he might have spent some time with the guys at Iowa State and Venables talking about, because that's Big 12 defense.
Yeah.
That's odd dime, doing stuff that you have to do in college to deal with the explosion of the spread. Oh, we're going to put dime defense on the field. We're going to put as many little dudes on the field as we can so we can have more speed to match up. And then if they're able to handle the responsibilities of making tackles and doing all that in the run game, it gives you an advantage.
That's the thing, is they have safeties and secondary players that are really, really good in support. And that's why another thing, like I said, it was my last number, one other one kind of on that point. The Patriots have aligned 8+ defenders in the box, 18% of the plays this season, fifth highest in the NFL. Now, I don't think they're all big guys. I think you're going to get undersized secondary players in the box, but they have run responsibility and they're fine with it.
They are fine with it. And you know why it also works? Because what they're doing also matches how they practice. Yeah. I would contend that when you talk to people that have come out of there, it is all fundamentals. They tackle all the time. They run to the ball all the time. And so if you're going to play a bunch of little dudes, you got to make sure that they're confident tacklers. And the only way you can be a good tackler, you have to rep it. So you have to do it all the time. And so when a lot of these teams are scaling back on the amount of contact that they have in practices, nope. The Patriots are still practicing like it's 1980s. We can put the pads on as many times as we can early in the season. We're going to tackle. We're going to hit. We're going to work on pad level, leverage, and all those other things. And we're going to beat you up, not only because of some of the simplicity, yet the complexity of the scheme, but because we just do the fundamentals better than you do.
No doubt. All right, this is a fun discussion. I want to get to one other quick topic before we wrap things up. We're going to do that right after this. All right, Buck, I tweeted this out the other day. You know, I'm sitting here getting ready for this game, watching Kyle Pitts, and I'm watching him flexed out, and I'm watching teams match them with nickel personnel after a couple weeks. You know, the week before, watching Mike Gesicki, who the numbers I got updated on him, by the way, 91% of his snaps have been detached. 91%. And so it begs the question, why even go through the charade? The opposing teams don't know they're not tight ends. Their own teams know they're not tight ends. Why in the world? I don't care if they give you the depth chart and they have him listed as a tight end. Cross out the TE. We've got to put a different name on that. So I was like, okay, whatever name you guys want to use. You want to call him the flex? You want to call him the big slot? You know, what do you want to call him? What do you want to call him here?
Yeah, no. So on the board, you remember in the draft room, you used to always have two designations for tight ends. One was the
we had them Y's and H's, right? But this is not like an H.
Yeah, Y's and H's. But then near the end, we were talking about them as a flex. Yeah. You know, because they're always flexed out, they're out wide. They're basically I saw your tweet where you talk about a jumbo wide receiver.
Yeah.
You have to treat him as such. So for me, when I see Kyle Pitts run onto the field, if I'm on defense going on, I'm like nickel, because I'm treating him.
That's what they do.
I'm treating he's a wide receiver. Now, the problem is, do you have someone in your secondary that can match up specifically with that guy? Because that guy can't be matched up with a linebacker and maybe a old school safety. It almost requires you to find a Jalen, a Derwin, someone who can handle that responsibility. Because I think as we talk about that position changing, I think it now is going to force us on defense to find another position to be able to match up with that guy.
It's like a big, it's a big nickel.
Big nickel player. Yeah, because you have two different nickel players. You got your regular nickel where you have the smaller defender that is playing your third corner. And then you have big nickel where you're playing with three safeties and two corners. Yeah. You have to have both.
I think it's big. So I think we've got that. I mean, that exists in terms of the big nickel. Robert Mays said that he said Nate, he wanted to give Nate Tice credit, coined the phrase a power slot. It's kind of like a power forward, like a power slot. I'm NBA. Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, small forward, power forward. So we kind of could have we could do the same thing, right? A small slot and a power slot.
I mean, it is, we've talked about the basketball team because we haven't seen Michael Thomas play this year, but basically Michael Thomas is a big slot receiver. Yeah. Larry Fitzgerald at the end of his time at
power slot. I like it.
You know, is those big guys that can do a handful of different things. And so it's, look, man,
which television network that broadcasts games is going to be the first one when they announce starting lineups that is going to finally say, we're not going to put,
oh, we're going to do it
next to them.
We're going to do it. We're going to do it tonight.
Okay, Thursday night.
The Falcons run out on Amazon and you're talking about the lines. You're going to be like, oh, here we go. Kyle Pierce. Hey, ignore that power slot.
Yeah, power slot. I think I like that. I like because it's the basketball, right? You got the small slot and the power slot.
We talked about it. Like even when we talk about these guys leading up to the draft, we talk about tight ends with NBA power forward or small forward like size and wide receiver like skills. That's what it is, because I need them to box out over the middle of the field and down in the red zone to win the 50-50 balls and all that other stuff. So, yeah, that's it.
That's it. I think, you know, receivers, we've been doing that forever. Now, you know, we talk about, you know, a slot receiver, a wide receiver, X, Z, however you wanted to label it. But I think this is a new position here that kind of exists. So it needs a name. So that's what we come up with here. Power slot, I think, is a good one. All right. We're going to be right back after this. All right, Buck, this has been a fun one, man. Anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
That was fun. Anytime we can do a deep dive on that, I know it was very Patriot-centric, but I think what it was an examination on how they have built their team, how they've nurtured the quarterback, and how other teams, so maybe just pay a little close attention to how they've helped Mac Jones and some of these other guys get off to a good start, because it's a copycat league, and if I want to win, I certainly want to copy and steal ideas from the best.
That is a blueprint is what that is for any team that currently has a young quarterback or is getting ready to bring in a young quarterback. The Patriots have laid it out for you. That is a blueprint for how to do it. Now go get it done. Easier said than done, I think, but it's all out there for you. Again, come hang with us tonight. If you're listening to this on Thursday, twitch.tv/movethesticks. It'll be a great hang as we watch the Falcons and the Patriots do battle. We're going to be back next week as well. Look forward to talking with you guys again. I think we've got a phenomenal guest lineup next week. I'm not going to spoil it, but one of them, yeah, maybe a future Hall of Famer and Defensive Player of the Year, but I'm just not going to give you any names, but he'll be with us next week. That's going to do it for us. Appreciate you guys. See you next time right here on Move the Sticks.